Podcast.
Data Dunoon Modern African Art from the Agal Collection is an exhibition currently on at the Dunoon Borough Halls until the 13th of June. And here to talk to me about it are curators Dr. Kate Coucher, lecturer in art history at St. Andrews University, and Madeleine Conn, cultural coordinator. So there's a fascinating story of how they came to work on this together, the background to the artwork, and how the collection came about. Collection's owned by Argyll and Bute Council, and it's a valuable resource for schools in Argyll and Bute. But its significance, as you'll hear from Kate and Madeleine, is so much more than that. Here's my conversation with both Kate and Madeleine. We're here talking about the Data Dunoon collection, and that's part of the Argyll collection. So, Madeleine, maybe start us off. Tell us what the Argyll collection is.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Argyll collection is quite a unique collection in a way because it belongs to schools. So it was collected specifically for school children in Argyll and Bute by Naomi Mitchison, the writer, and Jim Tyre, who was an art teacher, who later became an art advisor, who worked for Argyll County Council. And the collection was taken around Argyll and Bute by Jim Tyre in his van. It was to introduce young people that they, Naomi and Jim, perceived that wouldn't necessarily have had access to museums and galleries. So they collected artwork. Jim had a really amazing understanding of Scottish art at the time, and Naomi was also interested in kind of artwork that would provoke and kind of give young people new ideas and excite people about art. So they went around exhibitions and collected artwork, and Naomi also went to kind of travelled quite extensively, and Kate will no doubt talk about that in a second, but and developed all these relationships with Africa. So we've also got this amazing collection of African art, which was on display in Dunoon Library. So at the moment, the Argyll collection lives in high schools in Argyll and Bute, so it's in 9 high schools, and we've also started piloting projects in primary schools, so looking at kind of developing creative learning through these artworks.
And so when did the collection first come about, roughly? Because you can see the thinking behind it with our geography and how challenging it would be for many young people to get into galleries. So I presume it sort of dates from times when travel really was probably even more difficult than it was today.
Yeah, absolutely. So they started the collection in 1960. And they carried on collecting right up until Jim Tyre retired in 1988. But there's also a couple of pieces that came into the collection after that as part of the Glasgow City of Culture in 1990. So it's between 1960 and 1990 that the collection was kind of formed.
You've worked on a research project and are curating along with Kate. Kate, how did you come to get involved in the project and the research with Madeleine?
Yeah, so I'm a lecturer at University of St. Andrews, and my research focus actually is in Ethiopia, but East Africa more broadly is a region of the world that I teach through my classes. And one of the courses I teach is on modern art in Africa, so art from the 1960s and 70s, the era of independence. And so a couple of years ago, I was writing a lecture about a very well-known artist from Tanzania called Samuel Ntiro, and was simply searching for an example of one of his paintings to include in a lecture. And one of the first images that came up in an internet search was this painting, Chopping Wood, housed in this thing called the Argyll Collection. But I knew nothing about what the Argyll Collection was. Quickly discovered it was owned by Argyll and Bute Council. And so, you know, sent a simple email to the kind of public facing email saying, who do I speak to about this? I'm interested in this painting and how it came to be in Scotland, you know, and what it's doing in Argyll. And that's how I made the connection with Madeleine. And Madeleine very quickly told me that Sam and Tiro's work was one, in fact, of a whole cluster of paintings and prints that came from East and Southern Africa. So Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, Zambia, and there is a piece from South Africa itself. But these were part of this thing called the Argyll Collection for schools. But that the African works in particular, very little was really known about them, beyond the fact that Mitchison had bought them on various travels. She has an interesting connection to various places on the African continent. beyond the fact that we knew that she purchased these works, very little else was known about them. And in some cases, even things like the names of artists, the titles, the dates, these kind of bits of information had gotten lost amongst the paperwork or, you know, over time had become overlooked. So, you know, as an art historian, this was the kind of glorious detective story that I wanted to get involved in. So I got a little bit of funding from the Scottish Society for Art History and the University of St Andrews, and I was able to pay a couple of undergraduate research assistants, Meredith and Ellie Kem, and the three of us all came over to Loch Gilphead to see some of these works. And that was the start of, as I say, a bit of a detective story where we literally transcribed signatures, we reached out to academics in universities on the African continent, Makerere University in Kampala in particular. And we were able, over time, over the course of about a year or so, we were able to confidently attribute 12, well, 10 of the 12, two of them actually remain ongoing mysteries, but 10 of them we can confidently attribute to artists. And it turns out that Mitchison bought work by really important artists, really exciting and interesting artists, and artists that went on to have very significant careers in their home countries, but also internationally.
I mean, what a fortuitous email to get, Madeline, to open up this whole investigation into those. I mean, did you have any sense that these were as significant as we're now discovering?
No, not at all, because as Kate's touched on already, the kind of record keeping for the collection wasn't perhaps in the what I would expect, kind of coming from a museums and galleries background. It was kind of, I had a box of letters. The first thing that I received was a list of the artworks that were in the collection. So there's 173 artworks, and that includes like paintings, prints, sculptures, embroidery, textiles. So, you know, I was only a few months into the job at the time, and we were organising an exhibition at Dunoonborough Hall of the Argyll Collection with the Cowell Art Group, but they were really focusing on the Scottish artists, so people like Joan Eardley and Elizabeth Blackadder and Anne Redpath. So, no, this part of the collection I hadn't seen, and I had seen it, I knew that it was there, but I didn't know very much about it. There was a big project called the Public Catalogue Foundation project, where the BBC went round and photographed all the artworks in Britain. So the six of the artworks were part of that, because they were doing paintings only, not works on paper. So we knew a little bit, but no, it was a fantastic email to get, because, you know, yeah, to speak to somebody and who completely understands the culture of Africa and the artworks of Africa and has so much knowledge and so much connections was fantastic.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned, Kate, that they're significant. I mean, these artists have got works exhibited in pretty high profile galleries and things. This is sort of quite important work.
I mean, I think, yeah, absolutely, it is absolutely important work. The Argyll collection itself, you know, was this remarkable, progressive, rather utopian idea of making art as democratically available to some of the most remote communities in the Highlands. And so the kind of reality of that is that then there is some complexities as to how these things get looked after and how some of the records are maintained. And in the case of the African works in particular, it travelled physically thousands of miles, of course. But also Mitchison bought them from, most of them anyway, from very young artists. So artists who were in fact undergraduate students at the art school in Kampala in Uganda, for example, or who were in their early 20s and hanging out in exciting institutions like the Kemkemi Center in Nairobi. And so, you know, she buys these pieces from 20-year-olds and they come to Argyll, and of course nobody in Argyll has the capacity to keep up with the biographies and reputations of artists on the other side of the world. So part of what our project has done has been to sort of flesh that out, and we have in fact of course been able to really emphasize the fact that there are some incredibly significant people. So Samuel Ntiro, the starting point, and he was the only work whose name they were very confident, you know, the Argyll collection knew it was by him and it was attributed to him. But we really do need to emphasize his significance, because 7 years before his painting was bought by Naomi Mitchison for Argyle, he'd had a work bought in New York for MoMA. So, and earlier this year, you know, there's a painting of his hanging in MoMA in New York and also hanging in Kilmartin Primary School in Argyle. I mean, this is a really,
amazing, isn't it?
It's wonderful to tell children in the classroom that they've got a painting in their classroom that by an artist whose work is somewhere like MoMA. But another artist, really significant artist, and was an artist that the Argyle collection did not have the name correct on, is the artist Jack Katarakawe, who's a very important Ugandan artist, a self-taught artist. And he's somebody who, if you look at the signature on his work in Argyle, he had quite severe dyslexia, and he often varied the spelling of his name. And so somebody had literally transcribed the name that he'd written, which was missing an A on how it's typically spelled. So precisely because of that spelling mistake with his name, he'd been entered into the database as not the right artist, you know. But we've been able to obviously confidently say this is the work of Jack Katarakawe. And that's very exciting because there's just a big exhibition that's just opened at the Royal Academy down in London, featuring the Kenyan artist Michael Armitage, who's a wonderful contemporary painter. Michael Armitage has a whole section of his exhibition where he talks about the most important East African artists who influenced him, and there is a whole cluster of works by Jack Katarakawe on the wall. So at this particular moment in time, we have a work of Jack Katarakawe's on display in Dunoonborough Hall, and the rest of his works are down at the Royal Academy. So these are really significant paintings, and there's something for Argyle and Bute to be very proud of.
Yeah, I mean, and fantastic. When you describe that of a, you know, for our young people to be able to get that sense of, you know, they've got, you know, national, international gallery quality pieces in their schools, and to be able to talk about that. I mean, what a vision from Jim Tyre and Naomi Mitchison. And yeah. I mean, Naomi sounds like such a character to... you know, what have you discovered about Naomi? And cause she lived in, and I think she was even a councillor in.
She was a councillor, yeah. Yeah, she was a councillor for 20 years. I mean, she became a councillor in the 1940s. She's a remarkable person. In the course of her lifetime, she wrote something like over 90 books. I mean, that's an enormously prolific output as a writer. She was a novelist. She wrote short stories, she wrote books for children, she wrote a history of the African continent. I mean, a kind of product level of productivity that I think most of us think of as somewhat superhuman. But she was also deeply invested in Argyle. So she moved to Carradale, just north of Campbelltown, of course, between the First and Second World Wars with her husband and children. And she really threw herself, you know, they bought what was a kind of baronial house. But she wasn't really interested in being the laird per se. So, and she really got herself involved in the local community and famously went out with the fishing boats. And Carradale House became this kind of remarkable hub of activity. There was endless, you know, amateur dramatics performances and great hogmanay parties and all of this sort of thing. But it was in the course of her kind of commitment to being, you know, invested in, you know, improving and supporting the community that she became a councillor. She believed very significantly in being involved in things. And so she was elected in 1945. And this Argyle collection project was one that she was really passionate about. And Madeline obviously alluded to the fact that obviously it's not, there are other local authorities in the UK where, especially after the Second World War, there was this kind of idea of democratizing museums and making major collections, you know, making children in schools have access, allowing them to have access to kind of works of art. And there are other schemes, sort of pictures for school schemes down, for example, down in England. But the Argyle collection one is a little different because both Mitchison and Tyre, their ambition was bigger, and they definitely, as Madeline said, wanted to buy things that were thought-provoking, somewhat provocative. They weren't interested in kind of cutesy pictures for children, you know. They wanted, you know, Robin Phillipson's rather kind of gory painting of the crucifixion. I mean, they wanted something that would make you sit up and go, what is this? What am I looking at? They wanted things that kind of jolted people into thinking about the world beyond where they lived. And I think in that regard, the African works are kind of some of the best examples of the kind of scale of that ambition. So, yeah, Mitchison is a remarkable individual and somebody of who lived a remarkable life, but one that was deeply committed to Argyle as a place.
Yeah, I mean, and she was quite an activist, I think, wasn't she? She stirred it up on a number of topics. So
yeah, no, she did, absolutely, and she didn't stay quiet about things that she felt very strongly about. And she, I mean, she did, was, for example, a very, very vocal critic of apartheid in South Africa, and in fact was actually banned from travelling to South Africa because she had created a particular incident when she was visiting Botswana, well, what was then Bechuanaland on the border with South Africa. So, and she ruffled the feathers of the British colonial officers when she visited what were colonies that became independent nations in the 60s. And I, you know, I understand she also ruffled feathers in Argyle too. She had a very clear sense of what she wanted. And she, you know, she could sometimes get a little disappointed if things didn't quite go as she wished them to be. But there was a passion and a drive and a vision about her that is remarkable, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, is there any particular link in the Africa connection? Because I suppose, you know, at the very least, it seems like it could spark really useful discussions in the, you know, from where we are just now, very much into Black Lives Matter, exploring our own histories of in relation to slavery and things like that. So, you know, you can see how this could open up discussions in schools that are very pertinent just now. But is there anything that, you know, at the time, you know, that there was a particular thought process of why African art?
Yeah, definitely. So, well, there's a couple of things. First of all, she had a personal connection. So there was this young man called Lynchwe, who was from what is now Botswana, and he was at the time studying at a school in the UK, and he came on a British Council visit to Argyle in 1960, and he visited Carradale House, because, as I say, Carradale House was this sort of place where artists and writers and all sorts of folks would come. So the British Council brought him on a tour, and Mitchison became very good. She sort of took him under her wing, and he stayed for the summer with her, and she kind of tutored him, and she became very invested in this idea of kind of supporting and shaping him as a kind of as a young man. And he was a he was in line for the chieftainship of the Bagatla people, an ethnic group in what is now Botswana, right on the border with South Africa. So Mitchison travels, she has this connection with Botswana, and that's one of the reasons why through the 60s she travels there. But she also gets, she's very passionately interested in the era of independence. So when these African nations, Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, Zambia, Botswana, when they gain their independence from what was then, of course, the British Empire, these become new nations. And the artists that she bought from are young artists in new nations, very, very excited about articulating a new sense of national identity, you know, thinking about how art might reflect being Kenyan or being Ugandan or being Tanzanian, for example. And Mitchison, one of the things that she felt in the 60s was that there were parallels between this region of the African continent and particularly the Highlands in Scotland. And she writes about this in one of her books. She talks about how in Scotland, with the legacies of the clearances and the kind of social upheavals of the 19th century, there were, you know, issues around identity and how one sees oneself. So whether you have an affiliation with your local region or your clan, and how you negotiate that alongside being Scottish, a kind of national identity, and then perhaps even British if you want to expand it even further. And she sees similar things in Africa in the 1960s, where you have people like the Bagatla people, for example, or the Baganda people in Uganda, who are negotiating being part of an ethnic group, but also part of this new national identity. So I think in the 60s, she buys this artwork in the hopes that rural Scottish children can learn something about the African continent at this particularly important moment in time. But she also wants to kind of emphasize some sense that there are some parallels. She thinks there are some cultural parallels between these regions. And yes, just to go back to your original comment, Madeline and I absolutely think that these works have a really important role to play in diversifying curricula. And in that sense, we really think these works have a significance beyond Argyle as well. They have a role to play nationally in Scotland because this is an unparalleled collection. There is no other collection in Scotland of modern African artworks like this. And they are a remarkable opportunity to foreground conversations about African histories, the era of independence, and learn, obviously, about all of these individual artists.
I think it's also about, I'm not going to be able to say this now, specificity.
Yeah.
I'll say that again. Yeah. It's also about being specific about particular places in Africa. You know, Africa is this huge continent, so how do we learn about it? What do we know already? And it, you know, as a parent, it frustrates me sometimes the stuff that my children come back with from school about, you know, what they know about Africa. And, you know, there's very much this idea about that it's just one thing. This, well, no, it's huge multitudes of things. And so using objects, using collections to kind of talk about, to have these conversations and to have these little windows to the world in these classrooms is fantastic. I think it's a really, really good opportunity, and a really good opportunity for discussion. And the schools that we were working with on this pilot project were just completely ran with this project. And, you know, would the kids were in lockdown, so they were all at home and they were working on their own separate computers, but they'd be doing things like they'd be going into Google Earth and finding out about Nairobi and going into Dar es Salaam and comparing it to where they live now. And this whole idea about exchange between schools in Argyle and schools in Africa, and how we can kind of learn more about the world through these paintings. And I think that's really exciting.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's really interesting, Madeline, because you mentioned those exchanges, and we've got a number of schools that do that sort of link with Africa and go and do projects in Africa as sort of part of the schooling. And mm-hmm. But as part of this project, then you and Kate have developed specific learning resources, just making those linkages, I think, to the specific locations that relate to the artworks and things. So tell us a little bit more about the resources that are available and, you know, what's there for schools and for young people to use.
Yeah, I think when we were initially having conversations about the exhibition itself, it was all about what the impact of the exhibition would be. And we talked about how we could create these schools resources, but I think it was very much from a point of view that we wanted to work with the schools rather than just produce something and then hand it over. So because it was 2020 as well, we were kind of a little bit limited. I'm based in Mid-Argyle, so I worked with two schools that I knew would really take this project on board, and that's Kilmartin Primary and Toby Alec Primary. And so we had the series of conversations about what we could develop and what we could offer them. We've also spoken to Oban High School as well about looking at kind of secondary education, but in conversations about some of the artworks, they were based on folk tales, but we didn't necessarily know the stories around them. So what we did was, part of my role is working with the Creative Learning Networks, which is about developing creativity skills in young people. And we had a little pot of funding, so we worked with a writer, a poet called Tuona Sitoli, who's based in Glasgow. And he'd done a lot of work with Glasgow Museums about interpreting collections. And so he came and worked with the schools in a digital way, in a virtual way. So we had a four-week program, basically. The first week was an introduction to the artworks with myself and Kate. And then we did 3 weeks of virtual creative writing workshops, which were really, really fantastic. And the pupils all created work based, both artwork and written work, based on the paintings.
And those resources, I think I might say there's the website datadanoon.com, and anybody else that wants to sort of link to those resources, they can do so from that website, can't they? There's links to all sorts of other resources and information and maps and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's an interactive, they'll also go on our website as well, but it's, yeah. sorry. There's so much written information and images as well that people can use, but also ideas for how these works can be used in the classroom. There's a playlist and an interactive map, and, you know, all these amazing things that you can really experience the countries that these artworks are from, and also looking at these individual artists as well as kind of individuals and how, you know, how we present ourselves as people and, you know, what that tells us. So yeah, really good resources for schools.
Yeah, I mean it's fab for Argyle and Bute schools, but it's there for anybody to use. And And I mean, you're involved, you know, as part of your job in sort of those other creative resources and things for schools. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, that's so my job has got three main areas. One of them is the Youth Music Initiative project. So this is about, I think we're in year 18 now, it's Creative Scotland money to pay for music projects. And the idea is that the Scottish Government have committed to the fact that every child in Scotland by the time they leave primary school has done at least a year of music tuition. So, and actually, interestingly enough, Kate, we're going to be doing an African drumming project next year. So there's a nice tie-in because I've sent these, especially the playlist around all our musicians to say, look, we've got, you know, this is incredible that we've got all these amazing projects. So we've got music resources available, but what we've also done this year particularly is looked at creativity and health and well-being and how we use like the outdoors to promote creativity. And it's about both the health and well-being of the kids, but also the teachers as well, and the kind of learning staff more generally. So we worked with a writer called Linda Cracknell, and we've created all these amazing kind of videos. And that project's called Writing Our Outdoor World, and those resources are available to teachers throughout Argyll and Bute as well.
Oh, it's fab and such an important bit of the whole sort of learning, the scope of learning materials that go into that creative space. And I'm always blown away when you go around the schools and you go into the music departments or you go into the art departments and the stuff that they get up to, you know. From being a long time out of school, it blows my mind anyway.
They're massively creative spaces, but it's also really good, I think, to work with people, particularly from a sort of point of view of creative industries, to work with people that actually work in creative industries, to, you know, to meet Kate, to meet Tuona, to meet the filmmakers and the writers and the dancers that we've been working with, to think that we also work with the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra. They've got an ongoing relationship with Campbelltown. And the idea, and one of their musicians is actually from Campbelltown, and just this idea that, you know, you could do this job if you wanted to, you know, if you wanted to pursue this career. And so if you're not exposed to that, how do you know that that's a possibility? That what are all these jobs that are involved in putting an exhibition together, for example, or creating a piece of music or creating a piece of TV? So these projects, I think, are really good at making people aware, making kids aware of that.
Yeah, there's such a range of careers available, isn't there? And it's, I mean, you know, as you were talking before, Kate, it just made me think of things like Cove Park and the artist resource that's there as well, that I'm not sure people necessarily appreciate how much there is going on in the creative industries in Argyll, because it's, you know, we're such a big area, it's not necessarily visible to everybody, but it's, you know, really, you know, globally renowned resources and activities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly I think we're hoping to develop the connections, particularly develop some of these connections we've made with people in Tanzania and in Uganda. So as part of the exhibition, I'm hosting a little podcast series of sort of conversations related to themes. And next week we'll be recording a conversation with an artist and lecturer who's based at Makerere University in Kampala, where a lot of the artists trained. And I'm hoping that might be a connection we can develop further. And also we have another connection in Tanzania now, and in fact a school fairly close to Mount Kilimanjaro, which is where Sam and Tiro's paintings were. That's the world that they depict. Even the painting itself came from Dar es Salaam. So I hope that we might be able to return to Mitchison's vision about building connections and building bridges and pushing ourselves to learn about parts of the world that seem very far away, and that the Argyll Collection might be a good way of doing that, basically.
Yeah, I mean, what it just all comes back to that email and what it's opened up, and so much. It's just fab, and it's lovely hearing both of your passion and enthusiasm for it, which I'm sure will rub off on some of our young people. So if people are interested in seeing the artworks, where can they go and see them? Because they're currently exhibited, aren't they?
Yeah, so the exhibition Data Dineen, Modern African Art from the Argyle Collection just opened last week at Dunoon Borough Hall, and it's open until June the 13th. The Borough Hall is open Wednesday to Sunday, so not on Mondays and Tuesdays, just the second half of the week. And as I say, only till June the 13th, so you've only got a couple more weeks, but that's where all the Africa works on display. And Madeline, the rest of the collection is dotted all over the place right now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's in all the high schools, apart from Tyree, but we've got plans to get it into Tyree as well and in 10 primary schools, and also on display in Oban Library. And we're hoping to develop those relationships with the libraries as well, because as well as being a really important learning resource, it's also a massively important public collection, and we're really keen to make sure more people see it. And there's a lot of interest in people seeing it. So, yeah, we're really keen to look after it properly and care for it and curate it properly in the future.
Oh, that's fab. So encourage anybody that's interested to go along and look at it in the Borough Hall. Fantastic community-led project to refurbish the Borough Hall as well. So great to support them too, and sounds like watch this space for more opportunities to see the collection. So
yeah, we're hoping as well to tour this exhibition. We're hoping to tour to St Andrews and also Glasgow.
Yeah, we have definitely had some other interest also from potentially other places in Argyle as well. I mean, the whole thrust of the Argyle collection was that it is supposed to be, you know, the public community owned art collection, and so it should be enjoyed with the widest number of people. So we hope that we can share it beyond our guide as well. As I say, I think this is a collection of national significance. And you can visit the Argyle collection has its own website. You can look at all of the works. If you search the Argyle collection, you'll find it, argylecollection.co.uk. And the exhibition specifically has a website, datadunoon.com, that has, as we've already said, all sorts of resources, as well as the exhibition podcast, and we'll be having some videos in the gallery as well for anybody who can't see the exhibition right now. There'll be ways to enjoy it virtually.
Mm-hmm. We'll repeat those links at the end of the podcast just so that and maximise the opportunities for people to see it. So thank you both for talking about it and for all the work you've done in the detective work to uncover all these fantastic links. So that's just great and so fascinating. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
When I heard about the Data Dunoon exhibition, it piqued my interest, but I had no idea at that stage just how fascinating the background to the Argyle collection was and how significant the artworks were. The work of Jim Tyre and Naomi Mitchison in creating it is just amazing and fascinating. And thank you to Kate and Madeline for talking to me about it. Their passion and enthusiasm is just infectious. And what a fortuitous email that Kate sent to Madeline. And look what it's opened up. It's just amazing. And I'd encourage anybody who's interested to get along to the Borough Halls while the exhibition's still on until the 13th of June. It's also a great opportunity to support that fantastic community project of the Borough Halls in Dunoon, which is a fantastic regeneration of that building in Dunoon Town Centre. And if you're interested in more information, you can check out datadunoon.com/exhibition or argyle-butte.gov.uk/the Argyle Collection, where there's more information on both the exhibition and the Argyle Collection. Thanks for listening. Take care.
This podcast.